Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I think it just says something about their priorities, and they don't seem to be with Alaska fishing families.
The Kodiak fishery debates kick off tonight with some key candidates missing. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 3rd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new storm heads to some communities affected by last month's flooding.
There could be quite a bit of erosion with the wind waves on top of the surge that may occur.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
The Kodiak fishery debates for governor, U.S. House, and U.S. Senate kick off tonight, but with some key players missing. Governor Mike Dunleavy is skipping the event, which bills itself as the state's only candidate debate on commercial fishing issues. Dunleavy's campaign has said he has agreed to 5 debates, and the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce event is not among them. Former Governor Bill Walker, an independent running for the seat again, notes that Dunleavy did not attend 4 years ago either. He says it's a snub to the organizers and everyone else who wants to hear his views on fisheries.
I think it's incredibly disrespectful. It might be good politics, but it's terrible, terrible leadership to not show up.
Les Guerra, Dunleavy's Democratic opponent, alleges the governor has reason to dodge.
Look, Governor Dunleavy has a lot of policies to run away from.
Dunleavy campaign spokesman Andrew Jensen says no disrespect was intended.
It was a simple matter of prioritizing the governor's availability, his time. Unlike the other 2 candidates in the race, he does still have his full-time job that he has to account for.
Jensen says the governor is in Nome today, surveying the progress of the storm cleanup. He says Dunleavy expects fishing questions will be raised at the other debates he is scheduled to attend. The congressional debates are tomorrow night. All 4 candidates for U.S. House have said they'll participate, but U.S. Senate challenger Kelly Chewbacca is not coming. Her campaign spokesman says she had a scheduling conflict, which he would not identify. But an eagle-eyed Twitter user in Sitka noticed that Chewbacca is in Texas today, holding a fundraiser with another Senate challenger, Blake Masters of Arizona. Both of them are endorsed by former President Donald Trump. Clarice Johnson says she does a daily search for news about Chewbacca and found the invitation. Johnson, who is retired from commercial fishing, says it's disappointing to see candidates skipping the Kodiak debate.
I think it just says something about their priorities, and they don't seem to be with Alaska fishing families.
Kodiak public radio station KMXT will stream the debates from its website, kmxt.org. The governor's challengers will debate tonight starting at 7. The U.S. House candidates debate tomorrow at 6:30. Republican U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski will debate Democrat Pat Chesbrough tomorrow at 8:15. A landmark piece of legislation that regulates fisheries from coast to coast could be getting an update that has been years in the making. But as KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports, changes to the Landmark Act are far from the finish line.
In the world of Alaska fisheries, there's one pair of names that comes up with nature. Thanks to the Magnuson-Stevens Act, we will continue to enjoy these benefits today and into the future. Since 1976,
the Magnuson-Stevens Act has been around since 1976, and it sets the rules for federal fisheries in the United States. On Thursday, the U.S. House Natural Resources Committee passed a long-sought rewrite of the Act, which tightens restrictions on bycatch and calls out the threat of climate change on federal fisheries.
The revised act would still need to pass Congress before taking effect, but if it does pass, it could have big implications for the way Alaska's federal fisheries are managed.
Anybody who is dependent on halibut is impacted by the language in this bill. Anybody who is dependent on salmon and interactions between salmon and pollock fisheries, for example, is impacted by this bill.
Marissa Wilson of Homer directs the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. She says it's important to keep Magnuson-Stevens updated as the threats facing fisheries change in Alaska and beyond. For example, the rewrite would explicitly call out the threat of climate change on federal fisheries for the first time and would require regional councils to make plans to address those threats. Changes related to climate are thought to play a role in the declines of fisheries across the state, like the crash in cod stocks in the Gulf of Alaska. Linda Bankin with the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka says the acknowledgement of those effects is significant.
I think it's an important step in just highlighting how essential it is for fishery managers to build climate considerations into management of fisheries since we are seeing such rapid change.
The bill also adds two Alaska Native representatives to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. That's one of eight regional councils created by the original act to manage fishing in federal waters. Alaska Democrat Representative Mary Peltola advocated for those seats last year when she testified for the reauthorization in front of Congress. Today, she's a member of the House Natural Resources Committee. In a hearing earlier this month, the fishing advocate drew attention to the dire condition of fish stocks on the Kuskokwim River and in Alaska's oceans, and she called out one controversial culprit.
The bill before us today makes great progress towards limiting the wasteful problem of bycatch, the destructive practice that hurts Alaskans who need the fish for sustenance.
Bycatch is the incidental take of fish species, and it's one of the most significant focuses of the rewrite. Previous versions of Magnuson-Stevens say bycatch should be minimized in management plans, quote, to the extent practicable. That one phrase, to the extent practicable, is scratched from the updated version, essentially calling for the total elimination of bycatch altogether. That's a sticking point for a large coalition of industry groups and fishermen who sent a letter to the House committee alleging the new version of the bill is overly partisan and that it could throw the industry into chaos. The groups say bycatch is a reality in every commercial and recreational fishery in the U.S., and they say a requirement to absolutely eliminate bycatch could force courts and managers to shut down some fisheries altogether. The courts have used standards outlined in Magnuson-Stevens before to overturn fishery management plans. Most recently in June, when a district court judge sided with Cook Inlet fishermen and said the closure of their fishery violated the act and its national standards. Wilson, with the Conservation Council, says she hears the concerns that the rewrite leaves room for interpretation on what constitutes an acceptable level of bycatch. But she doesn't think the bill would create as much chaos as opponents suggest.
What it does is it signals, I think, to councils that reductions are really important, particularly here in the North Pacific.
Even though the rewrite cleared the House committee, its path is anything but guaranteed. Many amendments proposed by Republicans in committee were shut down during the markups, and the bill will still have to make it through a split Congress before it passes. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A storm is on track to hit a portion of the area pummeled last month by the remnants of Typhoon Murbach. National Weather Service meteorologist Scott Berg says the new storm developing in Russia is anticipated to move north of the Siberian Peninsula toward Alaska midweek.
And as it does that, it's going to bring some strong southwesterly, south winds into basically areas from Norton Sound north to Point Barrow.
Berg says as the front makes it inland, winds will turn more westerly and some storm surge is expected.
We're looking right now at it being basically minor coastal flooding. But there could be quite a bit of erosion with the wind waves on top of the surge that may occur.
Berg says erosion could be worse due to the damage done by last month's major storm. A special statement from the National Weather Service says strong winds are expected to move into the eastern Bering Sea and Chukchi Sea Wednesday afternoon with an elevated risk of coastal flooding from the Bering Strait to Point Hope Wednesday night into Friday. It says high surf is possible on south and west-facing shores of Norton Sound. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new generation of Aleutic speakers is keeping the language alive.
There's no like, yeah, I learn a little Aleutic on weekends when I can. All of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, my language, I have to save it. I have to do everything I can.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine and make sure to have an updated COVID-19 booster. Help keep your friends and family protected and healthy this winter. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A state plan to help build out a network of electric vehicle charging stations around Alaska has been approved by the Federal Highway Administration. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the OK puts the state in line for over $50 million in funding over the next 5 years.
The Alaska Energy Authority and the State Department of Transportation are working together on the EV plan, by which up to $52 million federal dollars will be distributed in support of fast charging stations to facilitate more electric vehicle use in Alaska.
Range anxiety is one of our biggest issues or challenges for the adoption of EV, and so we want to try to eliminate that.
Alaska Energy Authority Executive Director Curtis Thayer emphasizes it's uncertain how many fast charger projects the money will pay for.
We don't know what the cost of the equipment is as of yet, and then also where we're placing it and what type of electrical work or what type of work that needs to be done prior to installing the electric charger.
Thayer says the federal money can also be used to upgrade existing EV charging stations and help cover operation and maintenance costs. He says the plan's initial focus will be supporting EV charging stations between Anchorage and Fairbanks. The federal program stipulates stations capable of charging four EVs simultaneously, located every 50 miles. Thayer says the state has received an exemption from the spacing requirement for a stretch of the Parks Highway where there aren't any viable year-round host sites.
The gap there is about 80 miles from mile 135, which is just north of Trapper Creek, and it extends to Cantwell, which is mile 210.
Thayer says the AEA anticipates putting out a request for proposals for EV charging stations, and selected hosts will have a significant portion of their costs covered.
The program would fund 80% of the funding, and they would have to come up with 20% of the funding.
Looking beyond phase one of the EV plan, Thayer says additional highways and locations will be targeted for charging stations.
Homer to Anchorage, and we have the Glen Allen Delta to Tokepiece. And then you have the Marine Highway System, Ketchikan, Sitka, Kodiak, Juneau.
Thayer says rural Alaska is also part of the long-range plan.
I'm talking the hub communities, Nome, Kotzebue, Bethel, Dillingham.
The state's EV charging station plan will be updated annually over the next 5 years, and Thayer underscores that it's a living document, and the public is encouraged to provide input and feedback. The AEA is holding meetings on the EV plan around the state. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Half of the first language speakers of Kodiak Aleutic died between 2020 and 2022. But as KTOO's Claire Strempel reports, that's not stopping new speakers from learning the language and passing along a distinct culture and worldview to the next generations.
If you don't speak Aleutic, you won't get the jokes at the language house. It's a place where everything is a lesson. Catching up on gossip, making a grocery list, or washing the dishes. Derek Shaya is a mentor there.
To really get like the language down, you gotta use it and practice it. And so that's what kind of the point of the language house is a place where you can just get together and like use the language like you would in your day-to-day life.
No one lives here full-time, but the Shunack tribe uses a federal grant to pay a group of language apprentices and mentors to master the language.
Heritage languages are so important, and when you learn them, it's like, okay, I'm part of the crew saving it now.
Stevie Fretz works for the tribe and as a language mentor at the house.
There's no like, yeah, I learn a little Aleutic on weekends when I can. All of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, my language, I have to save it. I have to do everything I can.
Kodiak is home to a powerful movement to bring the Aleutic language back into daily use. For about 100 years, American schools and governments suppressed the language and punished children for speaking it. Now, the last people who speak it fluently are almost gone. Fretz says there are a few elders in town she can speak with, and a lot of folks who've gone through some basic classes at the university.
So there's a lot of people that'll understand me when I say, hi, how are you? And they'll say, hi, I'm good, how are you? But there's not a lot of people you can, like, have a conversation with around, like, I think they're mostly in this room right now.
In some ways, Fretz says she feels like she missed out. The tribe estimates there are now only about 17 elders who are fluent in Aleutic left. They lost about that many during the pandemic. That's a turning point. But the language movement isn't giving up. It's moving forward. Haley Thompson administers the grant. She says part of the Shunack tribe's goal is to train fluent speakers who can, in turn, teach.
We have a lot of motivation to learn Aleutic. People want Aleutic preschools and Aleutic language classes at the high school and Aleutic language classes at the college and teach us Aleutic, teach this, teach that. But the problem is we don't have the teachers to teach those classes and workshops.
A solid foundation of language revitalization already exists here. But Thompson says it's different now. There were a lot more elders before.
The next wave of what it looks like is building resources, archiving things that we know we're going to need, spending the time that we know we can get with elders. That's what it looks like right now. Just cherishing all the things that, all the resources we can get before we know that they're gone.
The stakes are high, but the rewards are immense. Fretz and the others are building fluency to be able to teach the next generation of Aleutic speakers.
Put your little Aleutic hats on tighter. Turn your little Aleutic ears up. Turn your Aleutic voices up.
About a dozen preschoolers are enrolled in the Aleutinkit Child Care Center. They learn numbers in Aleutic and Aleutic versions of popular kids' songs. There probably won't be any birth speakers left by the time they're older, but the language movement is working to ensure they'll have teachers. There's an Aleutic language program at the Kodiak College and courses at the high school. And the tribe hopes to put 18 people through its program at the Language House.
Like, what are you doing now?
Yeah.
Learners can meet up with elders at the museum once a week.
And then can you say,
I wouldn't say it that way.
Three of the elders that used to be at these sessions died during the pandemic. But the museum records them, so new learners and descendants of the speakers can hear their stories.
Oh, I love speaking my language. I guess to say I feel complete.
Florence Pestrikov didn't grow up speaking Aleutic, even though most people in her village did. American missionaries and schools enforced strict English-only policies for years. Parents like hers encouraged English to protect their children. The result was a swift decline in speaker numbers.
In the past, it was people were ashamed of the language. It's sad, really sad.
For the last couple of decades, she's been an active speaker and teacher. She answers her cell phone in Aleutic and speaks it with her husband. And that's the vision of the language movement, to have the language be in use, at home, in the grocery store, on the street, and to carry the values that are embedded in the words.
We never say goodbye. There is no goodbye in Aleutic. You say, Tang Chikamken, I will see you, Adaku, later. I like that.
Like the language in Kodiak schools and homes. Quiet for a while, but coming back. Reporting from Kodiak, I'm Claire Strimple.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, overlooking the Chena River in downtown Fairbanks, with 400 guest rooms and 17,000 square feet of meeting space. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com. NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
Dozens of Ketchikan area residents were students at a Pennsylvania boarding school before it closed in 1918. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, archived records show details about their lives and what happened to them after they left the school.
The last day of September is recognized each year as Orange Shirt Day. It's in remembrance of the trauma caused by the forced relocation of Indigenous people to residential boarding schools. Irene Dundas says the day is about recognizing the pain caused by residential schools. She's a cultural heritage specialist for Ketchikan's tribe, but she was speaking to KRBD outside of that role.
So the awareness of Orange Shirt Day and of just recognizing that there is a history, you know, of historical trauma on the Native community, and that if raising awareness and not trying to erase the past.
She says there could be more than 30 Ketchikan area residents who went to Carlisle Indian School, a boarding school in Pennsylvania that operated for nearly 30 years.
And some of them are not all Tlingit. They're Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian. And we are trying to work to try to locate the families.
Researchers from the Carlisle Indian School Digital Resource Center and the Carlisle Indian School Project are working to connect families to more information about their loved ones who attended the school. And Dickinson College houses the records compiled for the Resource Center. KRBD obtained archived student records from the college's special collection, which included every Alaskan student registered at Carlisle before it closed. 26 students had at least one address in Metlakatla, Ketchikan, Saxman, or on Gravina Island. Some of them appeared to have been adults at the time, in their early 20s, according to the records. After graduating, many of the students worked in Ketchikan. That includes Thomas Hanbury. His school records show that he worked as a carpenter in Ketchikan. Student Christopher Dalton, from Metlakatla, went on to work in the sawmill in Ketchikan when he graduated, and Patrick Verney worked in the Ketchikan printing office. The youngest student from Southeast Alaska was 7-year-old Margaret Maggie Jane Brown of Metlakatla. She graduated in 1913. The records offer a glimpse into the students' lives. Many had at least one parent who was deceased, left school due to poor health, or had no known home address. Several records show misspellings of Metlakatla and Ketchikan. Dundas says she's aware of the work being done to further identify those who attended residential schools, including Carlisle.
They have a webpage that they really did a lot of work on to try to help families and individuals look for their family members that had went to the East Coast.
She says she has hopes that local families might one day learn more about their loved ones' history.
It's going to be a big healing, you know, I guess maybe it's not even a ceremony. There will be some healing that needs to be done because it's really traumatic.
But Dundas says there are still changes that need to be made today to keep moving forward.
I feel like some of it isn't just something that has happened, you know, a couple hundred years ago or 100 years ago.
More information about Alaskans who attended the school can be found from the Carlisle Indian School Project or at the Digital Resource Center. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The highly anticipated annual celebration of Katmai National Park's Fattest Bears returns on Wednesday. The competition began in 2014 and has grown to a national phenomenon. As some of the world's largest brown bears bulk up for the winter, the tournament gives voters a chance to celebrate the success of Katmai's bears as they prepare for hibernation. The competition is also meant to highlight the large sockeye salmon runs of Bristol Bay. Last year, an older bear named Otis took the crown for the fourth time. Around 800,000 people voted. The competition is arranged as a single elimination tournament where the public can vote in one-on-one fat bear matchups each day until one is crowned champion. You can visit fatbearweek.org to vote. Following a couple of slow COVID years, Sitka businesses got a long-awaited boost this summer. While the surge in cruise tourism revived some traditional enterprises, it also inspired new businesses from food carts to sustainable snorkeling. One Sitkin's entrepreneurial spirit took her in a curious direction, however, managing a distinctively offbeat vending machine. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
It's the last big cruise ship day of the season, and I'm out at the Sitka Sound Cruise Terminal. There are several businesses out here that cater to tourists, but I gravitate toward a vending machine in the corner.
Please select a product.
It's called the Curious Fisherman, and it's not full of the usual sort of candy and junk food, but things you wouldn't expect.
There's squishy slugs or mustaches, mini tarot readings and mini oracles. Those have been popular.
Its owner is Tamara Kyle.
I've created what I call a message in a bottle kit. So it comes like this in a little plastic with a little piece of a nautical chart.
For the last 14 years, Kyle has been fishing, parenting, and running a small jewelry business. And for the summer, now, there's the Curious Fisherman.
I feel like there's a lot of random ideas that I toy with in my head, and I couldn't tell you exactly when the vending machine idea first came to mind, but it's been something I've talked about being a fisherman when I'm away from town a lot.
Then in January, one fell into her lap.
Someone put a used vending machine on Facebook for sale, and the little light in my head went off and was just like, oh, look, it's time. We need to jump on this opportunity and try it out.
But what to sell was the question. She threw around a lot of ideas, a healthy food vending machine maybe, but those were really hard to maintain. Maybe a vending machine for the bar scene full of gag gifts and games, or maybe something catering to tourists, considering the record-breaking potential cruise season. She cast the idea to the cruise terminal this spring, and they more than nibbled. They bit. So her machine has been posted up there since late May. While Kyle's wares are tailored to the cruise passengers, her products are mostly local. Her vending machine features over 10 Sitka makers, from locally made jewelry to household products, even smoked salmon. The items range anywhere from $1 to $60. I'm standing next to the machine, hoping someone takes the bait. But no one buys anything, so since it's a slow day, I decide to become the customer myself.
Pepperizing.
Okay, so I grabbed a couple mystery bags. Let's see what's inside them.
In the bag is a smattering of fun stuff, and I don't want to spoil the surprise of its contents. But it does include one of the oracles, and I can see why they're popular.
It says, I've been granted the card of the elephant, which gives me stability. Gives me some lucky numbers, too. That's pretty cool.
I don't know if Kyle hit her lucky numbers with this vending machine business or not, but the mystery is alluring, and more than anything, a little curious. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks and Riley Board in Kenai, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Claire Strempel in Juneau, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, and Catherine Rose in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank, Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.